Mr. Chairman and friends, what we have come to know as Buddhism, but which in the countries where it has been prevalent for the last so many hundreds of years is more often known as the Dharma or the Sasana, has been known now, we may say, in the West, in Europe and in America for considerably more than 100 years. And one might have thought that in the course of that 100 and more years, Buddhism would have come to be, at least in some quarters, at least in some circles, tolerably well known. But unfortunately, we have to confess that that is by no means the case. Buddhism, even after the passage of 100 years, even after the labors, the researches, the investigations, the expositions of so many scholars, is still not well known. In fact, we could even go so far as to say that far from being well known, Buddhism has become the subject of many misunderstandings. Some people, for instance, still classify Buddhism as one of the various religions of the world. You can read all sorts of books on comparative religion, and you'll find Buddhism listed there, along with all the other isms, some of them of historical importance, others perhaps not of any importance at all. And similarly, one finds that for some people, Buddhism is simply a sort of mysterious, distant, exotic, oriental cult. Or even for others again, Buddhism is a system of abstract philosophical ideas, something quite remote from ordinary life, something not touching life, not impinging on life at any point. Others again, and this is, or at least used to be, a very widespread misunderstanding, others again think of Buddhism as simply a code of ethics, that Buddhism tells you simply what you should do, or rather what you should not do, that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Buddhism appears, for these people, simply as a system, a list even of ethical rules, even prohibitions. And again, and this is something I discovered still very much in the air when I came back from India, initially some 12 or so years ago, for many people, Buddhism is a form of asceticism. I remember in those days people used to come and see me at Hampstead, where I was staying, and they were very surprised to find that there were no high walls surrounding the building where I was staying, and no barbed wire, and that everybody could enter freely and talk to whoever happens to be living there. They expected that we would be completely secluded from the world, inaccessible and remote, and not holding, in fact, any commerce with the world at all, but living in a sort of perpetual solemn silence. So this was the sort of impression that prevailed, that Buddhism was something rather negative, rather repressive, something life-denying, as it were. Leaving aside all these sort of more general misunderstandings, we can say that, for other people again, Buddhism has come to be identified with one or another of its specific forms. For instance, they encounter the Buddhism of Southeast Asia, they encounter the Buddhism of Ceylon, say the Theravada, and they think this is Buddhism, ignoring all the other forms. or they come into contact with that very, very colourful, that very rich, and that very precious form of Buddhism, that it was a Tibetan Buddhism, and they're carried away by their feelings for lamas, and tibone trumpets, and little drums, and stankas, and all the rest of that colourful tantric paraphernalia, and they think that this is Buddhism, just this, and nothing more. And then again, some of them get wafted away by some kind of Japanese or pseudo-Japanese dream. They read the works of Dr. Suzuki. They start trying to solve koans. And they think Zen. Zen is Buddhism. All the other schools, all the other teachings, they're just not Buddhism at all. Zen is the real thing. Zen is Buddhism. So here's a further misunderstanding. Buddhism is misunderstood in the sense that it's identified with just one or another of its specific forms, its particular cultural variants, which is rather like identifying the oak tree, the whole oak tree, with just one single branch, or even in some cases with one single acorn. So in view of all these misunderstandings, and I've just touched upon some of the more prominent, some of the more popular misunderstandings, in view of all these misunderstandings, we could in fact say that Buddhism is not yet really known in the West at all. Sometimes there's a great danger in being just slightly acquainted with something or someone, because then we tend to overlook the fact that we don't really know it at all. A little learning is really a very dangerous thing. It's better, perhaps, in some cases, under some circumstances, not to have any such learning at all. So perhaps we have to face up to the fact that in the West, we don't really yet know Buddhism at all. So perhaps we'd better, as it were, wipe the slate clean. Wipe it clean of all our misunderstandings, all our misinterpretations, and make a completely fresh start. Perhaps that would be best. Perhaps it would be best to assume that nobody really knows anything about Buddhism in the West, and that perhaps we do have to make, after all these years, even after a century, a completely fresh start, to take, as it were, a completely fresh, a completely new look at Buddhism. And this, we may say, is what the FWBO was founded for in 1967, and what it tries to do. It tries to take, as it were, this completely new look. It tries to make this completely fresh start. It tries to make Buddhism, after all this time, truly known in the West. It tries to lift it, we may say, out of the rut which I found it in some 12 years ago, of little groups that met here and there just once a week or so, simply to talk about Buddhism and nothing more than that. It exists, we may say, to cut the Buddha's teaching down to its absolute essentials, and to make those essentials really relevant to people's lives. So that it was for reasons such as these that the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order was founded in 1967, which is 9 years ago. 9 years ago, to some of us it seems a lifetime, because we may say in the course of the last 9 years quite a lot has happened. These last 9 years have been very rich indeed in event and in experience. And of course, during that time, during those 9 years, the FWBO has grown steadily. And when we say it's grown steadily, we don't mean simply that centres have multiplied. We don't mean simply that we've become better known, though these things certainly have taken place. What we mean is that more and more individuals as individuals, have committed themselves to the realization of the ideals for which the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order stands. In the course of these last 9 years, we may say that the FWBO has discovered quite a lot about itself. It's not that you start off with, in all respects, a very clear-cut idea of what you are going to do. You learn what it is that you are trying to do in the process of trying to do it. So in the course of these last 9 years, the FWBO has come to understand its own nature, we may say, somewhat more clearly than before, somewhat more clearly than it did, than we did at the beginning. And in particular, in the course of these last 9 years, the FWBO has come to realize that it has 4 things to offer men and women in the West. 4 things which are of greatest possible importance to them as individuals or as potential individuals. 4 things that correspond, we may say, to their deepest and their truest needs. So what are these 4 things? What are these 4 things that the FWBO has to offer? These are, first, we may say, a method of personal development. Secondly, a vision of human existence. Thirdly, the nucleus of a new society. And fourthly and lastly, a blueprint for a new world. And it's with these 4 things that this present short series of lectures will be concerned. In other words, in the course of these 4 lectures, in the course of these 4 meetings, we shall be trying to present the concentrated essence of Buddhism in a highly practical form, a form especially suited to the needs of Western man, needs which are fast becoming the needs of the whole world.